Hi everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Universal Narratives podcast. As we continue to look at the impact of the pandemic on education, we will now shift our attention to K-12 education in the United States. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking to Diana Rabanal, who is a public school teacher in New York City. She's also a certified teacher for English language learners. Welcome to our podcast, Diana.
Thank you, Sama.
So I would like to start by asking you to maybe give us a quick introduction of who you are, what you do, and what group of students you're teaching right now.
Okay, so I teach a seventh grade in Brooklyn for English language learners. So I teach ENL. Okay. And it's been very rewarding. My background was teaching English to adults in Peru. English is a foreign language. So going to public schools and working with children was something that was like completely new to me. But it definitely, the education I received just from my job alone made me realize like how undertrained I was teaching English as a foreign language while I was living in Peru. So it's been really eye-opening as to how, you know, how the craft really has, you have to have the skill and the education together. And really think people think, you know, teaching children, oh, it's just so much easier. It actually is way much harder. And but it has made me like grow like intellectually, spiritually, emotionally, yeah. And really in my teaching profession has made me grown so much more because of this.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree that training really makes a big difference. And of course, how much you have been doing that, the more you spend in the classroom, the more skilled you would be in teaching that particular group of students that you're talking about.
Right.
So if you're teaching adults, you need the experience, you need the training. If you're teaching children, you also need the experience and the training.
Right.
It's one way, it's not one way or the other. It's actually both. And this is, you know, it's funny because a lot of people think that if you speak the foreign language, for example, you can teach it. And
right.
it doesn't work this way. You just want to make sure that you also have the training and the skills to be able to plan lessons and convey them in ways that are suitable for the students that you're working
exactly.
with.
Exactly. Not anybody who just speaks English can teach English.
Yes. Great. Okay, so Diana, we have been looking at educators' reactions to the pandemic and how it has affected teaching inside and outside of the classroom. And, you know, given your experience working with English language learners, my question would be, how has the pandemic impacted your teaching?
So, you know, before everything, everything was more hands-on, and children could really, you know, become more engaged. So engagement is something that really was affected. And if a student doesn't want to engage, it's very easy for them to disconnect and, you know, not show their camera or not show up. So in that regard, you know, if the parent is absent, if it's a single parent, and the parent is always at work and just does not have the wherewithal to make sure that their child is logging in at the right time and doing their assignments.
Yeah.
You know, in the beginning, it was constant call and constant pushing, but it gets to a point where, you know, both of you just put your hands up, like there's really nothing you can do besides knocking on their door and going in their house.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what was really the biggest thing, is just not having that ability to reach and engage them.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree, especially if you're speaking about English language learners. How would you make sure that they're engaged and motivated? How would you make sure that they're actually there giving you their full attention and engaging with the content that you're trying to deliver virtually? So this would take me to our next question, which is there like any maybe specific challenges that you face teaching English language learners during the pandemic? You can reflect on your experience this past year or when the pandemic first started last year.
Yeah, so it would be definitely both the attendance issue. Mm-hmm. And then as far as when you do get them online, it's the technology. You know, a lot of the technology I was still getting used to, the children were still getting used to, that I have to be tech support explaining to them, like, okay, click this, click that. Sometimes it takes 10 minutes to get the class started, just to get everyone logged in, everyone on the same page. I click something, it doesn't work. You know, in person, you could do a lot of things, like, just in the moment, you can wing it, you know, but like, as far as technology, if it does not work for you, like, the lesson isn't going to go the way it was planned. And so definitely big thing was the technology. And unfortunately, you know, we got training and things like that, but like the children didn't get training, you know, so it's all on us to just tell them, you know, explain to them, click this, click that. And it's exhausting. And especially if it's, you know, not your language, and, you know, technology isn't everybody's language anyway. So that was just one of the biggest things that was so frustrating.
Yeah. And also, like, keep in mind that many of the parents that you're also working with do not speak English.
Right.
The context of New York City, some students are new immigrants or newcomers, mm-hmm. and sometimes their parents do not speak English. And sometimes whoever is keeping them home, one of the caregivers does not speak English. So
absolutely.
It's very challenging to even communicate sometimes with the parents virtually or the caregivers.
Yes.
So let alone, you know, trying to explain something totally new to students when they do not possess the language skills for that.
Right. But it really did come to it sometimes where there was like parent-teacher conferences where I told the student, like, listen, I'm going to talk to your mom. This is it. I set up a time. You're going to start the Zoom. And then they start the Zoom. I say hello. You know, I speak Spanish, so it made it easier. And then I guided mom how to get on Google Classroom and to check his view his work. And she was appalled, you know, to see like all of the missing assignments. Mm-hmm. And I just told her, anytime you want, we can meet here. And I can, you know, click on some things and show you what you need to do. And she was just so grateful.
That's great. You know, trying to, I believe like this is one of the different, like, you know, maybe the new roles that teachers have taken after the pandemic, all these different hats that the teachers had to wear in order to accommodate students, communicating with parents, seeking help from paraprofessionals, community members, just to make sure that you reach your students with the content that is best for them and that is comprehensible and easy for them to understand. So do you want to just tell us more about, were you teaching fully online when the pandemic started, and how are you teaching this year? Is it virtual or you're doing hybrid as well?
Yeah, of course. So the shutdown was of like March 17th for the rest of the school year.
Uh-huh.
Then in September, we went back, the teachers. It was up in the air with the negotiations with our union if we were going to go back in person. We went in, and then September 20th, we started just remote. A lot of the students, their parents had the option to bring them into school or to keep them home. So a lot of students, we had to create remote classes, hire teachers for just remote students. And then we had the blended students because we started 3 days a week and 2 days remote.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we started. And then ever since, right after February break, beginning March, we went back to 4 days a week, and Fridays are remote. And, you know, with the shutting and the opening and closing due to some cases of COVID, still a lot of, you know, instability. But to be honest, what happened was a flip-flop that a lot of the remote students became more consistent because they never flip-flopped the whole year. They were just always remote. They got into a routine, and a lot of them really flourished. There are some students that just don't want to be bothered, a little antisocial, just tell them what they need to do. They'll do their homework and they want to be left alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, but the students that were, it was called blended, that anytime, you know, it was time for remote, they were completely MIA, missing in action.
Mm-hmm.
If we went back to, if we got shut down, they would not sign on. And then they would not even stay informed with the school to know we were back in school, and they would miss like another week. And the school's trying to call the parents to tell them we're back in school, you know? So that was, you know, a lot of little bit of chaos and inconsistency.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think it's best when the students stick to one format and just follow. Yes,
it is true.
Yeah, and it's, I think it's easier for teachers too, because you're able to keep track of their progress. And, you know, the more I speak to teachers, the more I see how they're utilizing all these new technologies where they're keeping track of students' work virtually, assessment, and the recording data in a very effective manner. And I'm hoping that this would be taken with, you know, what, like some of these learning experiences, we would take them with us as we move back next year to face-to-face instruction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Really hope this doesn't carry into next year. There are a lot of them, just their apathy and unmotivation. But a lot of them really, I will say, really flourish. And I keep saying that to everyone. I just say, listen, the ones that are going to do well and excel, they're going to, whether we're there or not, they're going to make sure. And the ones that are going to slack off and not do anything are the ones, whether we're home or we're in school. I said the majority, like really the true average of that is the truth. The ones that are going to do it and are motivated, they're going to actually really flourish academically, you know, emotionally. And the ones that just don't care are not going to care either way.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is how life is with human beings.
Yeah, it's a learning experience for everyone. It's even learning. Yeah, it's a learning experience for teachers as well. So we're learning a lot. Yes. Yeah, we're learning.
Oh, I'm much better in person. Much better.
Yeah. So Diana, do you want to tell us a little bit about what technologies you use in your classroom right now? To maybe you can just think about like your average something that you do every day, one of your lessons, how you deliver your lesson virtually.
Yeah, so that was one of the challenges, that all my lessons had to be, you know, modified and adapted to some kind of technology platform. So a lot of hours went into that, basically like recreating lessons, but we were provided with a lot of resources, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. So like Nearpod is amazing. That's an add-on to Google Slides, and you can make it interactive, and it really engages the children. It helps you obtain, you know, their work, and you can
view
their work, and then you can have that, keep it, you know, for your records.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always add videos. I had my principal purchase BrainPop L, just so they can have, you know, the videos to go along with it. We also use, what is the other thing, like Khan Academy. Those are more like for tutorials and whatnot. But Cami's huge. I just put a document into it, and then they're able to open it up and highlight it. They can have it read to them, you know, text to audio.
Okay.
And they can write their answers. They can annotate the document, all just on the computer, on this computer program called Cami. So that was just so great. And just going paperless, like no more can they ever say, oh, my dog ate my homework or anything. Everything is there. Like you can go back to, you know, October and be like, you still have that missing assignment from October. Go look for it.
Yeah.
And do it. And, you know, it's so great to see how they've become so second nature. These children adapt so quickly. And now all I have to say, you know, they don't even speak English. And one boy, I was teaching him the alphabet on Zoom back in October. He was remote because all new students were remote at first.
Yeah.
And now that he's like in person since, you know, beginning of March, he's coming to class. I go in the auditorium with them. There's only four of them and they spread out. And I say, okay, go to ENL classroom, Google Classroom. He knows exactly what I'm saying. Okay, click today. All right, click classwork. All I have to say is, okay, open in Cami, and he knows. Or I'll say, okay, no, Nearpod, we're going to Nearpod, and they know, like, immediately. And this is someone back in September, October, like, never had a computer before in his life.
It's amazing. Yeah.
It's so amazing to see them, how they flourish.
Yeah, that's great. So this is perhaps one of the success stories. Are there any maybe other success stories or lessons that you perhaps learned during the pandemic, teaching your English language learner students that you would keep in mind in the future?
Yeah, that was definitely the big one. The student that was from Bangladesh, and then I was basically teaching him the alphabet and the letters, and now he's reading, coming to school, making friends. They're communicating on Google Translate, literally talking to each other, Google Translate. There's three of them that are friends. One is from Yemen, he's Arabic speaking. The other one just came from Ecuador a month ago, and the boy from Bangladesh. Three different languages. None of them have a common language. They're friends playing basketball. I heard they were playing soccer together at the school after school today, and they're just communicating whatever English they know, and on
Amazing.
their app on their phone, Google Translate. And it's just it's so beautiful. It really
Yeah.
is to see like children, how they want to socialize, and
Yes.
they, and then how technology can help, form those relationships that maybe would have never happened years ago, just
Yeah.
because of the language barrier.
It's amazing. I love that.
So beautiful.
Yeah. So, Diana, reflecting on the pandemic, how do you think your professional identity has changed? We discussed different roles and different responsibilities, but what are some of these specific roles and responsibilities maybe that you have taken since the pandemic started in March of last year?
One aspect I feel really good about, because I had begged my principal to buy BrainPop, I've become like the BrainPop guru at my school. So basically, I had to like make all the logins and be, the main person in communication with BrainPop to like implement it. And then like any teacher that has a problem with it, they call me and I help them troubleshoot. I explain to them like how to set it up, and I'll even like coordinate a time to go into their classroom to get their kids logged in like for the first time, and then I'll teach the teacher like how to make the assignments. So it was like really kind of cool that this year that they're just like, oh, Miss Ravenel is in charge of BrainPop. So that was really that was something new. Very new for me to have that role, but it also feels good too to help those teachers, because they want to be able to help the L's, and a lot of the teachers, I'm talking about content gen ed teachers, are becoming a lot more resourceful
Yeah.
and more motivated to help the L's. Usually they used to just be like my, like, oh, Miss Ravenel, like my problem. Like, they're not my problem. They're Miss Ravenel. But now it seems that everybody feels that they're all responsible for differentiating and making sure that they have access, to the content. And it's really, really nice to see. So yeah, it's like a technology advocate in that way. And then as far as like with the parents, the role was just the teacher. That's it. Talk about the students' academics. Now I am like the representative for the L's. Like, I am the school. Like,
Yeah.
I'm the school website.
Yes.
So anything they want to know, what form, the child brings the form to me, and I'm like, I don't know where this form goes, and I have to find out from so and so.
Amazing.
The parents ask me, all random questions, anything, and then like I have to just like find out for them. So yeah, I'm like the school representative for my L's.
That's great. Would this motivate you perhaps to, are you in any way thinking about seeking a leadership role maybe in the future?
I mean, we have an E&O coordinator. If she ever left, I would definitely, take that. I would be more motivated to take that position. Right now, I just like being the advocate, especially for my grade. I'm like definitely the go-to for any of my L's. As far as master's in administration, I don't see that in my near future, since I'm just finishing my TESOL license, my master's right now, and I'm exhausted. But anything is possible. You never say never. But I definitely want to always be like the person that people think of when they think that they think about helping or any kind of issue that involves an English language learner in the school.
That's great, Diana. I know you're doing an amazing job. I have seen that
Oh,
myself.
thank you so much.
So my last question would be, what lessons can we learn from the pandemic experience? Reflecting on your own specific experience, in your own specific school, what can we take with us as we move back to in-person teaching?
Okay. So the one thing that I am taking with me in my life, first of all, personally, is that you just always just do the best you can. Like I used to always like put a lot of pressure on myself with a lot of things. And with the pandemic, it has shown me personally, you know, professionally and everything, sometimes none of it is going to matter anyway. So just do the best that you can. And usually your best interests or your heart involved is what is going to really going to, you know, get the results more than you actually having to have the most perfect answer or doing it perfectly right. Mm-hmm. So that was something for me that has always been like a perfectionist and needed to always make sure things were done perfectly. Like there's no perfect with technology. There's no perfect when things are unstable. You have to let go and just let things be, however, or let the cards fall, however way they may. But as far as like with the professionalism and the teaching and everything is just to constantly learn. Constantly look to new resources, try new things. Even though I've learned all about all this new technology and everything, I still am a person that gets set in my own ways. Like we just had a new PD on like this advanced Nearpod. And I'm like, oh, let me just stay with the Nearpod that I know. I just want to stay with the basics that I know. But you always have to constantly push yourself to grow and learn because things are changing, especially with technology in our lives. You have to keep up. You can't just like stay back and think that you're going to be able to, you know, play along in the game when you're, you know, probably missing out on something that's going to help you, help your job, help your students that much more. It's really just staying up to date, staying current and constantly being on top and researching and pushing yourself.
Yeah, that's great. Being flexible, yeah. I think is something that everybody can learn from the pandemic. You just do your best and let things go. And mm-hmm. we're all learning as we're going. And the best thing to do is to just keep these things and these lessons in mind as we move on to face-to-face instruction again in the fall, hopefully.
Absolutely.
And as I mentioned earlier, we want to make sure that whatever success stories we had during the pandemic, we learn these lessons and carry them with us and utilize these platforms and technologies that allow us to become better teachers in the future.
Absolutely. I agree.
Is there anything else, Diana, you would like to reflect on or discuss before we end?
No, I just think that overall it was a positive story. We all learned something. The children, people say, oh, they had a horrible education. Okay, maybe some if they didn't engage, but overall they've learned how to become more self-sufficient. I pushed a lot of them that used to rely on me for everything. And I would say, no, you need to email that teacher and ask them that information. Or no, you can do this. I'm going to teach you how to do it. And then you're going to, you know, submit that work exactly the way it needs to be done. They've become so resourceful, technologically advanced. And I think that overall we've all grown and we've all had, you know, certain learnings from everything. And my heart really believes only good comes from bad. So,
yeah,
you know, with that, I definitely think that we all just need to be positive and move forward and just keep learning from every experience that we go through.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much, Diana. That was very insightful. And I think whoever listened to this podcast episode, they would find it very useful. The reflections, the stories that you shared were very heartwarming. And it's great to see that teachers are doing their best to accommodate their students in New York City, especially students who need the extra help, such as English language learners. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
No problem.